This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're doing All of My Heart. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Oh, are you ready? Ooh, ooh.
For one dry kiss. Hey!
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one. Is it awesome or amazing? Is it amazing or awful?
There you go. Yes.
Movie in the month of May. Today, we are doing the Hallmark classic, a series of three, but we're just doing the first one, All of My Heart.
Is it really a classic?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. This is a very popular series.
Okay. Yeah.
And I am here with my co-host, who knows all about rushing into love, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Oh, my God. Wow. Just because we were talking about how much this couple in this movie, spoiler, rushed into love, and I get that. That's great. I was going to say something nice to my co-host, Corinne Edding, but now I'm not.
Oh!
I was going to say, if I gave you a gift, it would be one of those best friend hearts that break in two, and you'd have half of my heart, and I'd have the other half. Instead of all of my heart, so it'd be like the bestie necklaces with the half of, forget it.
Okay, fine.
I just want some accolades because you were cheering for me earlier because I had my outline open before yours, and I would just like to bring that up while we have the podcast recording so it's on the record.
Yes, on the record, Tamara has it together today, and I am a hot fucking mess today. Currently, my phone is in my car. Let's just all pray for my phone / my car windows for a moment and hope for the best.
Dear baby Jesus, please protect Corinne's phone from all the elements and whatever else might be out there in the dark night. Please give her sanctuary and a safe space where the windows will not be broken. We pray in your name, baby Jesus. Amen. I can tell everybody that fun game that I was telling you about, the find the smell in my friend Larry's house.
Well, you always said you wanted to be a detective, so you had.
Oh, not this time. Not like this. No, this is not fun. So, gentle listeners, I know you know that I have the most incontinent dog in the world, Miss Mella P. Real name Melody, but we call her Mella P because she does not like peeing anywhere but the carpet, it seems like. Since I've been staying a great deal at Larry's house, I was smart enough to buy a rug cleaner since I have hardwood floors at my place and have been using it pretty religiously. So much so that there was a mildewy smell accumulating in the room and it was bumming me the fuck out because I'm like, not only is my dog pissing all over your carpet, Larry, now that I've washed it apparently so much that it's creating a mildewy smell. I am so sorry. Found out it was the little spot under my carpet cleaner. And I sprayed it with vinegar, and it went away. And I was a happy, happy girl.
You're such a great detective. One of the many things I like about you.
Well, it was like the worst because you walk in, and I'm like, God, it smells like mildew because the carpet cleaner's right by the door. And then I'm like, but then it dissipates when you come into the room. Where is this? It's like, it is a mystery. It is.
You pull out your magnifying glass.
Do you have a magnifying glass for noses? Is there something that you could use for your nose to magnify your sense of smell? That's what I needed.
Oh, my gosh. No, no. I don't think that's what you would have been like. Ah, I can't see anymore.
You know, they have like the magnifying glass for your eye. They have like the big horn for your ear.
Yeah.
They've got to have something for the nose. Somebody needs to invent that.
They need to like invent it so it's like in cartoons where the smell has the tendrils that go out so you can visually see and follow the track of where the smell is coming from.
Well, that would just be recreating scents altogether. And that's just crazy talk, Corinne. Now you're just talking crazy.
Look, I'm just adding another dimension to smell. And I'm here for it.
Maybe like a reverse neti pot. But without the liquid that just sucks up the smell. And whirls it around in your nasal cavity.
I do not want to live in your world.
all the time just for these circumstances where the smells are elusive. You know, I'm going to have some feelings about this goddamn movie. I got to stop saying goddamn. We just had a whole Jesus bit and laying it on too thick on the religious end.
Oh.
I'm going to have some serious thoughts about this gosh darn movie.
Oh, yeah. It's all about a house.
I know. Are you doing this on purpose? Property. Property, why? Why, inflation, do you make it so impossible for somebody that has a decent job not to be able to buy a house anymore? And that's the only thing I really want in this world is a place to call my own.
That totally reminds me of the fantasy that I was telling you that I had.
Oh, where we moved into a mobile home together.
Oh, no, that was a dream that I had. That's not my fantasy.
Oh, oh. I'm sorry. Okay. Well, yeah, I was like, if you had a fantasy about us moving into a mobile home, we'd be like, you know what, Corinne, you got to set your sights a little higher.
No, my fantasy was about owning a plot of land and having several tiny homes, but like really nice ones that aren't too tiny on them.
Yeah.
And then having different people that I love live in them and having like a couple of community rooms and stuff too.
Where would you put this tiny home plot of land?
I don't know. Somewhere nice. Somewhere that's like a little remote, but close enough to easily drive to the city. Because we got to go to our movie theaters and Trader Joe's and stuff like that.
So a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll.
Yes, exactly.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I like looking at shit like that, so I will start scoping out some plots.
Thank you. Great. Perfect. And then you can have your own home on my beautiful plot of land.
Oh, oh my gosh. I have this vision that you're going to become like a domineering landlady.
Oh my gosh.
Once I move into your plot. She was my best friend for 40 years. And then once I moved into her tiny house community, she became a tyrant.
No, I think that you would be more of a tyrant than me. You'd be keeping things in shape. You'd be like, come on, people. We have yards to make pretty.
I don't know. We've had this constant argument for like years and years where I'm like, I want a house. You're like, houses are a lot of upkeep.
Yep.
I don't care. I want a house. They cost a lot to repair.
Yeah.
I don't care. I want a house. And I probably will get sick of it within the first 7 months, but at least I can say that I did it.
Because... I'm like, I can't even afford to upkeep my car, much less like a house. So,
oh yeah, I wouldn't just dive into it. I'd be smart about it. And that's why I'm like, it's not happening because things are so astronomically expensive nowadays.
Yeah.
Dare to dream.
Dare to dream. Speaking of dreams, this little All of My Heart movie is quite a dream in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a synopsis for us to please, Tamara?
A synopsis to please.
Yes.
Yes, Tamara has a synopsis. After she burps. Excuse me. Sorry about that.
Oh my gosh. I had a burp this today in my car that, like, I swear my lips rippled like the lips on The Simpsons. It was long. It was voluminous. It was an echo chamber. It was amazing.
Damn, I wish I could have seen it. Oh, anyways, here is Tamara's synopsis. Jenny, the luckiest broad in the world, played by Lacey Chabert, is a New York City sous chef with aspirations of owning her own restaurant. Until one fateful day when this lucky biatch gets a call from a lawyer. It seems she inherited a house in Bucks County, Pennsylvania from a distant aunt, and she needs to come immediately to tie up all the loose ends. At the lawyer's office, she's surprised to learn that she doesn't own the property outright. She co-owns it with Brian, played by Brennan Elliott. This would have been a helpful tidbit of information that probably should have been shared over the phone, but what do I know? Once they see the property, Jenny is enchanted, and Brian is ready to sell, ready to sell! This seems like an ideal scenario. She will buy him out, fix the place up, and open a bread and breakfast, where they only serve bread for breakfast. A bed and breakfast. Which is almost like a restaurant, right? Until a series of unfortunate events leads to Brian needing to live at the house with Jenny. What whatever will happen between these two. Spoiler, they have a couple of kids right off the bat before they're even married.
What?
What? In a Hallmark movie? Yep. You want more of this scandalous tale? Stay with us and we will divulge all the secrets in all of my heart.
Ooh, nice. Hashtag Tamara's not bitter at all. No.
Hashtag kids before marriage in a Hallmark movie? What? It's probably too long for a hashtag. Maybe I should condense it. Anyways, Corinne.
Yes.
Do you want to find out what's in all of my heart?
Oh, I know what's in all of your heart. Love, creativity, joy, an excellent jealousy. Laugh. Jealousy. True, true.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, definitely.
A little bit of anger to add a little spice.
It's not anger, it's rage.
Oh sorry. Right. Sorry. Rage.
There you go. Yeah.
I am ready to share the Hallmark movie All of My Heart with our gentle listeners.
And all of your hearts everywhere out there.
Ooh.
Bring.
This is going out to all of our gentle listeners' hearts on this evening. Thank you for tuning in.
Wow, you sound like one of those sexy DJs, the late night DJs circa the 90s.
Exactly.
Nice. Yes.
I'll be taking your song requests in between this tale of love and heartbreak.
With Delilah.
Yes, Delilah. That's exactly who I was going for. Jenny is a 20-something chef, more aptly put, sous chef, as Tamara pointed out, working in the kitchen of a posh New York City restaurant, and gets chastised by the head chef for adding her own flair to his signature dish. However, it is clear that the chef and her have a great relationship, bantering back and forth. That evening, they're in the kitchen of a party they're catering at a beautiful country estate, and the host, Mrs. Danbar, comes into the kitchen. She was originally going to talk to the chef when she sees her old classmate, Jenny Findlay. Is that you? Jenny looks up from her prep work. Ashley? Ashley, standing there in her little black dress with her blonde hair and Hallmark curls cascading down her back. Mm-hmm. Oh, Hallmark curls, how we've missed you. Tamara's like, no, we haven't.
Not really. I mean, just you speak for yourself, honey. I was just like, oh, there they are again. Nice.
Yeah. Grown-ass adults with ringlets. Great.
Holding on to that youth so hard.
The six-year-old in me is like, ready for that. I was like, I want to be Shirley Temple. Ringlets are the bomb.
I know. The only time they're the bomb is when you're weighing your head back and forth and they're bouncing around you, and that gets old in about 2 minutes. And then I'd be like, okay, well, what's next? Aquanet. That's what's next.
That is what's next. Ashley looks smugly at Jenny and states, I always wondered what happened to you. Jenny explains, my mom got sick and I had to quit school and go to work. Jenny says with a note of disdain, so you're a caterer now. And Jenny says, yeah, and I hope to become a chef and own my own restaurant one day. But Ashley is not impressed. Well, are you married? She asks. Jenny slaps on a smile. No, but I have a long-term boyfriend, so we're practically married, and I think he's going to propose any day now. Ashley, feeling so much better about herself, says, well, nothing says love like Tiffany's, and waves her large diamond ring in front of Jenny's face.
I got excited because I halfway was listening when she said that line, and I was like, oh, Tiffany? Your wife's name's Tiffany? Oh, that's awesome. And then I was like, oh, she's talking about the goddamn jewelry store.
I think we're alone now. There doesn't seem to be anyone around.
No, Corinne. The 80s was a couple of weeks ago. No. I hope this generation, or at least very soon, we get away from that. What are you doing? Where are you working? Are you married? As like the follow-up question. What are you doing? Where are you working? Are you married? What does it matter? Who cares if you're married or not? You don't have to have a fulfilling full life with a husband. It's nice. Regular sex is awesome. But does it have to define you? No, it doesn't.
You know, I don't get that. People don't really ask me if I'm married. People don't ask me about kids, generally speaking.
Oh, they do me. They're like, are you married with kids? And I'm like, bite me. So that's a no.
You're like, no, can't you tell from my youthful glow?
Yeah. I get plenty of sleep on this face. Can't you see it?
Yeah.
Those dark circles are hereditary. I hate to tell you. They're not sleep deprivation. One night, a short while later, Jenny is out with her boyfriend, Daryl, the one she was talking about. She's wearing a cute red dress and he's in a suit. They're eating at a fancy restaurant. It's proposal time! Or is it? Daryl remarks, wow, that's a fancy dress you're wearing. And Jenny responds excitedly, you said it was a special occasion and I want to remember this moment forever. Daryl leans forward excitedly. I have great news. I got a new job, and now I get to travel all over the place. Next week, I'm going to Singapore, then Stockholm, Madrid, everywhere I've wanted to go.
Yay.
Jenny congratulates him, but her smile doesn't light up her eyes. There's some daggers in the way. Mm-hmm. She asks, what about us? I thought you were going to propose. We've been together for 5 years.
Yeah.
Daryl stammers, Jenny, you know I love you, but Jenny takes no shit. I want a picket fence and you're on your way to Singapore. Geographically, we're out of sync.
Mm-hmm.
She's breaking up with Daryl, but first she's going to order the lobster because her dress cost a fortune and she wasn't planning on wearing it for the letdown of an evening.
Mm-hmm.
She breaks up with them real quick. They've been together 5 years. She thinks they're getting married. And when she finds out that he's off living his jet setter life, she's just kind of like, well, we're breaking up and I'm having the lobster anyways, waiter.
Oh, you don't think that there was like a lot of different things that led up to that moment? On top of it, he fucking is taking, like, she had no idea that there was a job on the horizon. If you're with somebody for 5 years and they're like, BT Dubs, I just got a job where I'm going to be gone over half of the year traveling internationally. Like,
I'm not saying she was not justified. She was very well within her rights and probably a good idea to do that. I'm just saying that she was so, like, flat. She was like, you're going to marry me, right? Oh, you're moving? Okay, we're over. Lobster, please. Like, usually when that happens, like, the woman's a wreck in her house. Snotting all over the sleeve of her sweatshirt, inconsolable, eating pints of ice cream and watching bad rom-com movies. At least that's what I do.
I think that she just reached the, you know, sometimes relationships are dead, you know,
like, well, then don't expect the man to marry you if it's dead and you're getting close to the dead zone. Maybe walk away beforehand, before he gives you the engagement ring and you go down the aisle and then realize 10 years from now it was a mistake, Jenny. That's all I'm saying.
I'm glad that you understand how Jenny should be feeling. This is good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just maybe a little triggered for being in the not greatest relationship for 20 years. It wasn't always bad, but going down that road and looking back and being like, huh.
So what you're saying is you're jealous of Jenny because she made the decisive decision that you think that you should have made several years before.
No. I'm just saying I don't quite buy Jenny's reaction. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Like, she says there's a lot involved. She's got a vested interest in this relationship. They've been together for 5 years. She thinks they're on the precipice of marriage. And then he swipes the rug out from under her. She bonks on her butt, bounces right back up and says, lobster, please. So it just, like, I don't know. That just didn't, just seemed a little far-fetched to me.
For me, I'd be like, yeah, fuck you very much. I'm getting the fucking lobster. Just like she was, except it was a Hallmark movie, so she couldn't say fuck you very much. I'm getting the fucking lobster. She said it in polite Hallmarkese.
I think you need to make some voiceover dubs for some of these Hallmark movies, Corinne, and what they really were thinking and what they should have said. In their head, she's saying, motherfucker, you're going to eat the fucking lobster, and I'm going to squirt this lemon in your eye and say it was an accident. But you know what, Daryl? It was on purpose.
And by the way, you're paying for this shit. Yes, he motherfucking is. Mm-hmm.
I want a lobster for her, and then can you box me up a lobster to go?
Amen.
Because I think I'm going to want some later on, possibly tomorrow. I don't know.
To heal my heart.
There may be some bisque in my future. Who knows?
Does anyone know how to hold my heart? Not Daryl. Daryl doesn't know how to hold your heart.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Later, Jenny's at home when she receives a phone call from a lawyer. He informs her that she's inherited a house in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. The owner of the property is Emily Adams. She left it to Cousin Madge, who is your mom's aunt. Jenny's confused, has questions, but the lawyer says he can answer all of her questions when they meet in his office in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So it's off to the lawyer's office. Doodle-doodle-doo!
At the lawyer's office, Jenny finds out that Emily died a couple of months ago in a retirement home, and they found a will from 1965 where she named two beneficiaries, her cousin Madge and the caretaker who looked after the property. They're both dead, so the lawyer tracked down their next of kin. Jenny gushes, I can't believe I have a house. Am I dreaming? Is this really happening? The lawyer responds dryly, as far as I know. Jenny glows with new homeowner glory when her excitement suddenly gets interrupted by the door behind her opening and a guy in a business suit talking on his cell phone coming through the door. I gotta call you back, okay? Right, yeah, bye. He hangs up and says hi to everyone in the room, shaking their hands. The lawyer introduces Jenny and Mr. Howell, who is related to the caretaker. The lawyer explains that they... And I'm just going to put my beef out here right now. I have the strangest beef with this movie and not one that I would have expected.
Oh, yeah?
You don't find out people's names until well into the movie on this one. Like, there'll be a character and you won't know that character's name until like halfway in or three quarters of the way in. You'll have like already met them, had conversations with them, they've done things, and then you don't find out until like several scenes later what their fucking name is.
Oh, yes.
I know there's IMDb, but I'm just saying.
Okay. Like, okay.
Yeah.
I hear you. I understand.
I feel like you're, what's that? When you're like, placating. I feel like you're placating me.
I might be a little bit because I never remember anybody's name anytime, even if they say it 17 times in the first 10 minutes of the movie. I'm like the guy, the stockbroker guy. You know the guy from New York. Talks on the cell phone a lot.
Tamara, my name is Corinne. Corinne.
Not talking about the guy in the movie. If I ever... ever described you like that, have me checked for a stroke or an aneurysm or something along those lines.
No, I totally agree with you, though. I'm terrible with names as well. Thank you, IMDb. However, I got literal with this movie, and I just went with the names that they gave me, or didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Until
I know, almost set the synopsis to Gilligan's Island theme because his name is Mr. Howell.
Yes!
So sit right back and you hear a tale of a faithful trip. It started on this New York street to... No, I'm just kidding, I don't know.
Oh my gosh, that would have been so amazing! No,
it would have, but it would also would have been very time consuming because I got like two lyrics in and I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that one.
Yeah, that's what happened when I started working on a, not for this movie, but for Pretty in Pink. I was going to do an ODK theater. And then I was like, nah, I'm not
doing too much. Too much Hades. I can't do it.
So anyways, the lawyer explains that... They each, Mr. Howell and Jenny, own half the house. Jenny is pissed. The lawyer never mentioned her inheriting half a house. He said a house. I can just imagine how you'd feel if they were like, you got a house, Tamara. And you're like, ah! And then you get there and they're like, you got half a house, Tamara. And you're like, ah!
Have you ever seen those horror movies where people like turn into demons and their flesh melts off and they become these like terrifying beasts?
Yeah.
That's what I imagine it'd kind of look like.
That would be... I was going to say that would be amazing, but I actually...
Thanks.
I don't want to... No, that's what I said. No, I was like, I don't want to see you like that. I love you too much. I don't want that kind of heartbreak for you. However, Mr. Howell doesn't care about the heartbreak for Jenny. He is thrilled. Perfect. We can get that house on the market and split the profits. Jenny, who has already moved into the house in her mind, states indignantly, "I'm not going to sell my home. I want to keep the house." The lawyer convinces them to drive down to Bucks County and check out the house. From there, maybe they can come to an agreement. Mr. Howell isn't happy about this. He needs to work, but Jenny is for it. And so the two of them pile into her car and head out to Bucks County.
They pull up to the farmhouse style house. Great description there, Corinne.
I looked up farmhouse style houses and they showed pictures of exactly that house.
Okay, I'll allow it. And things aren't going great. Everything Jenny loves, Mr. Howell, we still haven't heard it. Corinne's outline writes, "We still haven't heard his first name yet." I could just hear the frustration in that little paragraph, that little sentence there. Oh, everything Jenny loves, Mr. Howell hates. She thinks it's quaint. He thinks it's dusty and has way too many doilies. He's intent on selling, but more than anything, he needs to get back to New York City as he's already missing a meeting. He's already missing a meeting! She somehow persuades him to let her buy him out. Not right now, but eventually. She's always wanted to own her own restaurant, and she could pivot that plan and turn the house into a bed and breakfast. They shake on it, and she takes him back to the train station to return back to his business life. Jenny doesn't waste any time. She moves to Bucks County, settles in, and dusts and fluffs and scrubs and scrapes, working on getting that house shipshape. With her baseline cleaning done, she starts experimenting in the kitchen. Just as she's pulled out a batch of croissants, there's a knock on the door. She's out in the country all by herself. Is this serial killer time? Usually they don't knock on the door, Corinne. Just gonna put that out there that serial killers...
See how I spelled serial killer?
Oh, cereal. C-E-R-E-A-L. Clever.
Because it's clever. A Hallmark movie, so it's serial killer... Instead of serial killer.
So is that just somebody that comes into your house and eats all your cereal?
Yes.
Oh.
That can be really frustrating. You're like...
I was going to say, that sounds horrible.
I'm like, you had experience with that where you'd be like...
Oh, Lord.
You'd be like, I'm going to have some cereal this morning. Wait, there were 3 boxes that were full last night.
Yes. Yes. And we just bought them yesterday afternoon. What happened to them?
I got a little hungry.
Jesus Christ, do you have a worm or something in your belly? How can you eat so much? Oh, nice. No. Corinne, this isn't a Lifetime movie. It's her friendly next-door neighbor, Alice, a 50-ish-year-old woman who lives on the farm down the road, and she's brought Jem as a housewarming gift. Now I really hate Jenny, because not only did she get a house, she got some delicious homemade preserves. Fuck right off, Jenny.
Oh, I get those from one of the people I cat-sit for. Christmas time, she gives me delicious homemade jams. They're fantastic.
Way to rub it in, Corinne. Way to rub it in. I'm having a moment. Choose your time and place. Not now, is what I'm saying. Not now. Jenny invites her in. They sit down in the cute vintage kitchen and crack open the jam, spreading it on some of Jenny's oven-warm flaky croissants. Alice is wowed by the buttery flakiness of it all and compliments Jenny on him. Jenny thanks her and confesses, I was thinking that I'd supplement my income while I'm getting the bed and breakfast up and going by selling baked goods to some of the local businesses, but I haven't been able to get an appointment anywhere. Alice helpfully responds, my niece works at the coffee shop. Let me see what I can do. I so wanted a croissant after I read that part. I'm like, oh my God. They keep putting croissants in the scenes and they're driving me crazy.
I was watching it and I was like, I bet Tamara's really hungry right about now.
The jam and the croissants.
By the way, the jam that the person who I cat sit for is so good.
Why are you telling me this? Why? Like, what are you telling me?
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic. Maybe I should share it with you sometime when you come over and visit.
Maybe. Maybe. Like there's a question in your anywhere in your head. Maybe. Yes, you should totally share it with me.
I didn't know. I didn't realize.
Oh, that's why I mentioned in your tiny house commune dream that we were discussing not too long ago.
Yes.
I was like, I want a garden. And you're like, well, I only want like gardens for food. And I'm like, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
I want tomatoes because fresh tomatoes from the garden are delicious.
So good.
Pickling cucumbers because I love cucumbers. And if they start getting too robust in their growth, I can make pickles. And something that I can make jam out of. I don't know what it is. I don't care. But, oh, I would love to try my hand at some preserves. And it's because of this movie. Thanks all
my. I was wondering all where of my that
heart.
Came from.
Thanks all of my heart. Yes, because it makes so much sense. You grow your own fruits. You can pick your own fruits, and then you know how they keep spoil, or oftentimes they'll spoil if you can't eat them in time or mm-hmm. give them away yeah. enough. So you make preserves that last for a really long time, and then you get to eat the preserves.
Sounds good to me. Mm-hmm. Can't wait for your preserves, Tam. The next thing we know. We're at the coffee shop, and Alice's 30-something-year-old niece, Casey, is munching on one of Jenny's croissants. She's impressed and says, "We don't usually go for croissants at our shop, but this is good. We'll give them a try and see how they do." Just then, a hot guy walks into the coffee shop, and she, along with all the other women who are working there, perk up. Their all eyes all say, "Hello there, stranger." Winky, winky. Until a gaggle of kids come through the door after him. Womp, womp. He's taken. Casey explains to Jenny, "There's absolutely no single men in this town. Do you have a boyfriend?" Jenny explains, "I did until recently, and he looked great on paper. Cute, great career, super nice, but ultimately, I wanted more commitment from him than he was willing to give. So we broke up, but I miss him sometimes." Casey nods understandingly. "Well, maybe you should call him. But what do I know? I'm single." And with that seed planted in Jenny's mind, she goes home, and later that evening, "No, don't do it. Don't do it." She does it. She calls her ex. It is an awkward conversation. Fully awkward. Where he starts off good by saying that he's so glad she called, but then he gushes about his job and all his travel and asks how she's doing almost as an afterthought. She says she's fine. Does not mention inheriting a house or changing her entire life direction and moving out of New York City to the country in Pennsylvania, but does make up the excuse of thinking she left her truffle shaver behind at his house. Because she feels like a fool for calling him. "I told you you'd regret it, Jenny. I told you."
And good on you for not letting him know anything that's going on in your life, because fuck him.
Yeah. Then that evening, she's woken up from her sleep to hear rattling at the front door. She's obviously freaking the fuck out. Mm-hmm. I would personally hide. You know, there's the fight, flight, or... fight or flight, and then there's freeze. There's actually a third one, freeze. Yeah, I'm like mm-hmm. the freeze. I'll just be like, "Hi guys, you can't see me."
Oh, look, this house comes with your own Corinne-sized statue. Wow, amazing. And Corinne's doing a real doll pose.
It wasn't sexy. It was not a sexy pose.
You had your mouth way open and your arms were bent. That's all the first thing I thought of. I'm so sorry.
Oh, real dolls, you are the gift that keeps on giving. Jenny is not a real doll, does not do a real doll pose. Instead, she takes the more active role, creeping down the stairs with not a rolling pin, which would be the weapon of choice that I might go for as far as like blunt instruments mm-hmm. go, mm-hmm. with a wooden spoon. Does she sleep with a wooden spoon? I'm not sure how that will protect her, but hey, maybe the rattling at the door is a vampire. But you know, if you don't invite the vampire in, but maybe she's a vampire hunter.
My God. I didn't realize that she had a wooden spoon in her hand. That was my mother's weapon of choice growing up. A wooden spoon.
Oh. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, your mom is scary with the wooden spoon, so.
Oh, yeah. That's why if I saw Jenny walking down the stairs with the wooden spoon, I'd be like, ah, flashbacks, and then run out the door.
You probably, like, blocked it out of your mind when she was, like, creeping down the stairs with the wooden spoon. You're like. Wooden spoon? What wooden spoon? I don't see no wooden spoon. Twitch, twitch, twitch.
There was just a black box in her hand that said censored across it that I couldn't see past.
You're like, I thought that she had a dildo, and I was surprised because it's a Hallmark movie, but hey.
To each their own. I mean, maybe they're getting progressive. Jenny looks out the window, and it's not a vampire. It's Mr. Howe, not from Gilligan's Island, but the one from earlier in our story. She answers a door asking, what are you doing here? And a very rumpled and frazzled Mr. Howe responds, because we still don't know his first name, I'm moving in. She pushes back. That wasn't part of the deal. He retorts, well, that was before I became the fall guy on a botched merger. My legendary boss blew a business deal and I got blamed. Now no one wants to work with me on Wall Street. She tries to push him out, and he reminds her that half of the house is his, so she's stuck with him. Yay! I kind of felt so conflicted about this because I'm like, well, that's not part of the agreement, but at the same time, it is half of his house.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't have a place to stay, yeah. Like...
No, I was like, Jenny, you can't just push him out. It's fucking half his house.
Yes, yeah. And you guys had kind of a sort of a handshake agreement that wasn't like... super set in stone, and you probably haven't given him anything for the house yet.
Exactly.
The next morning, Mr. Howe wakes up with some pep in his step and smells delicious smells from the kitchen. He makes a snarky remark about eating a lot of croissants, says he's going to need to use her landline, and snakes a couple of her peach and cranberry tarts while he talks down to her. These are delicious. I'm just going to indulge your little bread and breakfast. Bread.
You can say,
I cannot
you
say.
You can say B&B.
B&B. I don't want to. Oh, I don't know why.
You're like my sister when she went to France and she only wanted to speak in French, but she didn't speak in French. And so she was having like a really hard time.
And I apparently can't say bed and breakfast because it keeps coming out. Bread and breakfast. Bread and breakfast. Anyways, yep. B&B. I'll try it your way, Corinne. I'm just going to indulge your little B&B fantasy for a bit longer. But you know, I fully intend on selling this house. He walks out of the kitchen with his mouth full saying,
fucker.
Great stuff. Can't wait to find out what lunch is like. All right, Mr. Howell. Not only are you going to talk down to Jenny, squash her dreams by saying you're still going to sell the house, you're also going to snark her food and then say what's for lunch like she's there to cater and serve you, motherfucker? I do not think so.
And on top of it, be like, okay, and we're selling this bitch. Like, no.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, yeah. you said that she could keep it, and now you're changing your tune because you're hard up for the quiche.
Mm. Well, if it's quiche that he wanted, Jenny could give him quiche.
Oh, cash. Sorry, cash. Dinero, dollars, cheddar, money, moolah.
Okay, fine.
And now, a third of the way into the movie, we find out... Mr. Howe's first name is Brian. Brian is desperately calling old friends and coworkers, trying to get another gig. He reaches out to Harry, who tells him, stop calling me. I know your value, but your damaged goods. Gotta run. The stock market's about to open. And Brian's been hung up on. Jenny kindly checks in with him, and Brian laments, this is the first time in 12 years that he hasn't been working when the stock market opens. She sympathizes with him. Oh, that must be rough. And he agrees, then lets her know he's going for a run to burn off some of this angst. She asks him if he can move his stuff out to the porch temporarily so she can polish the hardwood floors, and he obliges, but isn't very happy about it. Why doesn't he just put the stuff up in the bedroom?
Mm-hmm. Because right now she's not allowing him into the bedrooms, which I would be like, fuck that. Half the house.
Yeah.
I'm taking a fucking bedroom. Yeah.
Right on. Fuck right off, Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
You just go ahead and close your eyes and spin around, and whichever side of the house you're pointing at is yours, and I will just go mosey my way over onto the other side.
After a lovely run through the country, he comes back to the house to see Gabby, the goat, eating his raisins. Jenny comes outside and wrangles Gabby while Brian proclaims to Gabby, you didn't even bother reading my resume.
Did you happen to catch a peek at his water bottle belt?
No.
So Brian's running and he has this, like, it almost looks kind of like a weightlifting belt. It's this thick belt around his midsection. And in the back of the belt, there's three pockets that all have squirty bottles of water in them.
Yeah.
The squirty bottles are white with red caps, and they totally reminds me of like a reverse cow. I'm like, that just looks weird. He looks like he's got udders on his back, and when he's bending over chastising Gabby, I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, are you going on like a 32-mile marathon run? Do you really need 3 water bottles? Interesting.
Well, you know, he's getting into country life. Moo.
Oh, I see. One in Bucks County.
Oh, yellow. Yellow with that water bottle belt. Water bottle belt.
It was utterly ridiculous.
Ooh! Darn you. That was so bad. Okay, let's move along.
Okay. You know what? You want to say I'm bad? You're playing right into it. Don't act like you're high and mighty with that one.
But a resume eating goat is really the least of their problems. The kitchen sink gives up the ghost and they call a very tall plumber. He is very nice, but says that it's going to cost $5,000 to fix the sink. Jenny is feeling pretty defeated with this news. After the plumber leaves, she says to Brian, "What am I going to do? I can't use my kitchen like this. My silver linings are being drowned in the sink." Brian actually says, "Well, maybe I can fix the sink. It can't be that hard, can it?" Jenny is dubious, but Brian is in can-do-it mode, convinced that if he can get an MBA from Wharton, he can fix that sink. So, the next day, he tries to get the old 80s Ford F-250 truck out in the barn to work. But after getting it to crawl forward 3 feet, it sputters to a stop and a plume of smoke poofs out from under the hood. I'm not a mechanic, but I'm going to say none of those things are good signs.
Good call, Corinne.
Thank you. He calls the mechanic slash tow truck, and the guy comes out, looks at the truck, telling Brian that the truck needs a full engine overhaul. Brian begs, "Come on, man, I can barely afford gas." The mechanic sizes him up and gestures to Brian's wrist. "I'll do it for your watch," which I'm guessing is a very expensive watch. Brian sighs heavily and hands over his watch. The man, who is a young, studly 20-something, immediately puts on the watch, flexes his arm, and asks, "How do I look?" Brian, beleaguered, replies, "Like a very affluent mechanic."
That was a cute line.
Yeah. He's sad about his watch, but he can't deny the results as he drives the truck that coughs and sputters the entire time into town. But hey, it's moving, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once he gets into town, he parks the truck that still seems to want to run even after it's been turned off. And he walks past an old guy, Ed Asner, who most of his bits I've cut out of this movie, but I do mention him now. And he is a delight in this movie. Mm-hmm. He's a lovely piece of color. Sitting on a bench in front of the hardware store, Brian remarks to Ed Asner, "I used to ride in limos." Ed replies, "I used to be taller," as he eyes the suspect truck. Once Brian is inside the store, who is standing behind the register but 5K plumber guy? Brian rolls his eyes. "Oh, you're not just a plumber," 5K plumber guy responds. "Nope," Brian continues. "Let me guess, you also own this store?" 5K responds. "Yup." Brian bitterly responds, "You know, this whole monosyllabic thing isn't working for you. Perhaps you should say a little more." 5K plumber guy in all his brawny, bearded glory responds flatly, "Perhaps you should say a little less." This, in some magical bro way, seems to break the ice between them, and we find out that 5K's name isn't Thor, which is what it would be if I was naming him. It's Tommy. And Tommy helps Brian get all the things he needs together to fix the plumbing issue.
Well, well, well. The lady in the cafe said there's no single guys in town. Thor appears to be single, and so does the not-so-bad-looking youngish mechanic that came to help Brian with this truck.
But the not-so-bad-looking youngish mechanic who came to help Brian with his truck seems like a bit of a smarmy McSmarmington.
Oh, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, they're like, there's no single men in this town. And if you looked at this last 5 minutes, it's raining man in Bucks County. It's raining man in Bucks County. I mean, I thought people would be all over the fucking 5K plumber / star owner / 6'3" Thor guy.
Oh, yeah. He's a tall drink of water, but he is actually 6'6.5 feet tall.
Oh, shit. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was off by 3 inches.
The only reason why I bring it up is because he is very tall. He makes Brennan Elliott look like Lacey Chabert, who is a very petite woman. Next to him, he is dwarfed because of...
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know what they say. Objects in Hallmark movies are often smaller than they appear. After many plumbing hijinks, Brian is triumphant.
Yay!
He asks Jenny to turn the water on, and when she does, a ghostly song arises from the pipes. And how the fuck did that even happen? In what multi-universe do you get a radio of some sort hooked up to your plumbing? Because every time she turns on the water,
it's more like Ariel, you know, Ariel's voice transported into the plumbing.
So he shoved a mermaid somewhere in the pipes to fix the problem, I guess.
Well, that mermaid has pipes, so that makes sense.
And the pipes are running clear, Jenny states. Your plumbing is so musical, Brian gleefully replies. I figured you could sing along while doing the dishes. And there are no heart eyes between them, but perhaps things are getting better. And Brian is certainly acting like less of a dick, so yay? Yay for less dickish and more sing-songy pipes.
Yeah.
Later, when they're at the coffee shop, they're trying to pick out the color to paint the house. Jenny wants it yellow. Gross! Such a frenetic color. And Brian wants it blue. Rhymes with ew. Who would want that drab color all over their house? Ashley, the waitress who is witnessing their whole conversation, suggests... Why don't you combine the two colors and go for a lovely green? Brian and Jenny mull this over, and Brian says, the color of money, maybe a good omen. Jenny agrees with the caveat, maybe a seafoam mint, something that doesn't compete with the color of the trees. Brian banters back, yes, non-competitive seafoam mint. I'll see if Tommy has that color. And he leaves to pick up some paint. Once he's gone, Ashley says to Jenny, you two make a very cute couple. Jenny pish-poshes, no, we are not a couple. He's hopefully getting another job and moving back to New York City. But Ashley can see what they cannot, that there's some love kindling sparking between the two of them. And she responds, careful what you wish for. And Jenny nopes on out of that coffee shop.
I'm just going to let you know that I'm doing a quick find and replace because I called Ashley Casey through much of this movie.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Did I call her Casey? Did we say Casey in the beginning? I think we said Casey in the beginning. Because I was like, oh, yep. Casey from the coffee shop.
Casey. It's all Casey. I call her Ashley like once in this entire thing. I was like, Ashley, I don't think that's the right name. I think it's Casey. And I look up and I'm like, fuck.
Okay. 12 matches replaced.
Yep.
Okay.
I committed.
Once that paint is picked up, Jenny and Brian start painting the house and have what looks like a very fun but also very expensive and infuriating paint fight, if you ask me, because they all got to clean that shit up later.
Mm-hmm.
However, as they laugh and playfully fling paint at each other, the first sign of connection between the two starts to simmer as they stare at each other with new eyes.
Ooh. Wakey. I was just like, y'all don't have much money. What are you doing throwing that paint around?
And you know some of that's getting on the windows. You're going to have to throw away all those clothes that you have on right now.
Yep.
Ugh. Larry paints and there is paint everywhere.
I wanted to see, because he's wearing this like puffer jacket when they get into the paint fight. I wanted to see him wear... the paint glommed on puffer jacket later in the movie. Sadly, that did not manifest.
No. because you would have to throw it away.
I tried to manifest it with the, you know, the power of positive thinking, but it didn't work.
Maybe it would have looked a la 90s where you used to like splatter paint all over and do those airbrush shirts.
Oh, hot. So hot. And they were all in neon colors, too.
Yeah. Yo, this is the story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down.
And I'd like to take a moment to sit right back to tell you all about how I became the Prince of Bel Air. Later, Brian's on the phone with Harry and... No. His One Wall Street connection. He's giving Harry a tip on who to invest with when Harry hears a... meh on the other end of the line. And Brian says, Gabby, shush, I'm on the phone. Harry asks, who's Gabby? Brian responds, oh, Gabby's a goat. Harry is shooketh. You know a goat well enough to know its name? Oh, we have to get you out of there. And he hangs up on a very puzzled Brian. Brian isn't sure what to make of the phone call, but at this point, he does know what to make of Jenny as they make heart eyes at each other as they polish hard wooden surfaces and make small talk. Why is your face turning red?
It's because you're talking about this like it's a porn grin. Renovation porn. Oh.
You wish you could be polishing hard wooden surfaces in your own house. And I want to say throughout the movie, this isn't in the script unless Tamara adds it in at some point. There is a picture of Emily on the wall, a large picture of Emily. Yeah. And she looms with a slight smile throughout the movie. And I'm like, yes, because I have a large framed photograph of my face in my apartment.
I know, like a school photo circa like the 12th grade when your parents would put your pictures up on the wall. But she lived alone and was a recluse, so she put her own picture on the wall to gaze at herself.
Yeah, but the size of like four pieces of paper put together, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. A 18 by 24 for sure. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's like 16 by 20 to 18 by 24.
Absolutely. I was like, that's... And it wasn't like she was wearing like a super cute dress or it seemed like some kind of occasion. Yeah, it would just look like a school photo, like you said.
She looked like Madge the accountant, and that was a picture on her employee badge where she's like, I'm taking this picture, but I'm not too happy about it. Uh-huh. I guess I'll smile a little bit.
Exactly. She takes her badge and she's like, let's make this
blow that shit up. Yes. Oh.
She's like, my roots aren't showing in this photo. Yeah.
Haven't looked that good since those glamour photos I took back in 92.
Oh, man. I wish they'd had a glamour photo of her. That would have been amazing.
Right? With like the freaking gold wrap around her and the gloves and the big chunky gaudy jewelry or Hallmark jewelry.
And the big either hair.
Oh, for sure, the big hair. Oh. You've had too much big hair, though. We can't. We're all full up on the big hair.
I don't know. Can you have too much big hair? It's sort of glorious.
I know. I'm like starting to lean back into the big hair since I started wearing my hair wavy, and I'm not mad at it. The bigger the hair, the closer to God.
Your hair looks glorious. I think your curly hair is so cute.
Mm-hmm. Except when I flip it. Watch this. Throughout the day, I'll flip it, and then it just gets, like, even more voluminous. It's, like, three sizes bigger on this side. See? See how it grew?
Oh, nice. Now all you need to do is just move it up a little.
Don't you dare. Don't you make that teasing hairspraying motion to me. It's my new improved look. I do all that in the morning, and it's called mousse.
Oh, now your hair looks really good.
Yeah, I need to get it cut, though. That last lady did a number on it. Ugh.
The way you described her totally made me think of those videos of that guy who wears, like, the little claws on his hands and goes... Yes.
Edward Scissorhands, it was.
Yeah.
Much more like Edward Scissorhands than the TikTok videos I watch.
Oh, my gosh. As as Jenny continues to experiment in the kitchen, like she experiments with polishing the hard wood.
Oh, my God. Stop it. Need to get you some furniture polish and put you in a room by yourself for a little while.
Look, I'm single. I got to get my, you know, I got to
get that shit out.
Got to get the passion where I can create it. She confides in Brian that she needs to make more money because the renovation is burning through her savings. He suggests pole dancing, but she doesn't know how to do it. So then he's like, well, this is a Hallmark movie. Maybe I should go for something more G-rated, and suggests that she brand herself and get a distributor. If she markets herself to enough of the neighboring cities, not as herself, but like for baked goods. I'm like, I just talked about pole dancing and now he's saying you should brand yourself. Brand your baked goods. She'll establish a demand that will be very appealing to distributors. Jenny is unsure, but with Brian's encouragement, bakes a bunch of samples and loads them into her car to get selling. She confesses, I'm just not sure how I'm going to do this. And at first, Brian gives her a talk about show 'em the old razzle dazzle, razzle dazzle 'em. But just as she's about to drive off, he runs back to the car and says, forget everything I just said. Just be yourself. Finally, she feels truly seen by Brian, and the heart eyes they give each other are off the charts. Sadly, there is no kiss tractor beam. Perhaps they're saving that for another day. Brian affectionately double taps the side of the car and runs back to the house, leaving Jenny free to drive off without causing Brian bodily injury.
Why doesn't he just go with her? I'd always like a wingman if I'm trying to go sell my baked goods. And he's a stock market bro. Like, he could totally probably schmooze his way into some of those places with her.
I totally agree with you. He would be fantastic.
And it's not like he's not doing anything else better at the moment.
Brian's looking for a job. Brian is pounding that pavement because
he said he already talked to everybody in the business and everybody blackballed him.
Brokers that stock.
Yeah. Jenny drives off to different towns talking to different restaurants / local markets, etc., and tries to land a deal with a snarky guy who runs a small deli in one of the towns. He shuts her down when she tries to sell her goods, but a couple that was right behind her in line asked to taste her goods. The woman apparently paid her way through college doing Avon, and I'm thinking she had to be a real shark to make that happen. Yes, look at all my riches and my big houses and lavish cars, and I didn't even have to do anything. All I had to do was find 10 people to do exactly what I'm doing, and they would find 10 people, and they would find 10 people, and they would find 10 people, and it pays for itself.
It looks like a triangle, almost like a pyramid.
Oh. She raves about how delicious the pastries are, causing the guy behind the counter to relent and place an order. Jenny happily gives the couple a box of baked goods and tells them to look up her bed and breakfast, or B&B, and she will happily cook them breakfast if they're ever in town. She calls Brian on a return home from her mission, having landed 3 more clients, and he excitedly congratulates her and does a beautiful happy dance after he gets off the phone. Several days have passed and Jenny is out making deliveries when the house phone rings. Brian answers it. Hello? Hello? Who's on the phone? Is it Ed McMahon calling from the grave, telling them they've won the Publisher's Clearinghouse sweepstakes? Is it Ed Asner calling to offer wisdom from his park bench in front of the general store? You'll have to find out after the break. And we're back, but none of the aforementioned people were on the phone. It was just the very confused, very silent boyfriend of Jenny. Daryl. Daryl quickly hangs up thinking he got the wrong number and redials. Brian answers the phone again with a slow, hello? And a disgruntled Daryl responds, is Jenny there? Brian says, no, she's out. She'll be back in a couple of hours. Can I take a message? Daryl grumpily states, it's Daryl. I'm calling about the truffle cutter. I'll call back later. And suddenly, Brian is wondering if Truffle Cutter is code for something and Jenny is a secret agent, or it's a sexual innuendo. Just like Corinne's furniture polish, I got my Truffle Cutter right here.
I'm like, using the word cut and sexual innuendo in the same, I don't know.
Oh, I guess
secrets.
You're right. But What he finds out once Jenny gets home is that truffle cutter is code for my ex-boyfriend called, and when he flips out that I'm living with a man, I'm going to tell him that that man means nothing to me. Or TLDR, Carstairs sudden but inevitable betrayal. Jenny talks to Daryl, and they both say that they miss each other, and Brian, who thought he and Jenny were vibing, walks upstairs feeling defeated.
Aww. But to Brian's credit, he doesn't act like a sulky Anakin Skywalker. He continues to actually be rather sweet and continue to help fix up the house. When he goes to the store to get supplies to open a window that was stuck, Thor, a.k.a. 5K, Plumber, a.k.a. Tommy, confesses, and from thus forth will be named Tommy Thor. I know how to fix anything in a house, but my understanding of women, they're a mystery. Speaking of, how is that mystery Jenny? Brian stammers. You know, Jenny, she's, you know. Tommy Thor eyes Brian. I think you have a little crush, Brian responds. It's complicated. I think she has a boyfriend. A couple of days ago, some guy called, and she seemed happy to hear from him. Tommy Thor scoffs. It was a phone call, not a wedding. Tell her how you feel. And for someone who claims to not understand women, he has some pretty sound advice.
Mm-hmm.
And he's fucking hot. He's like...
And he's fucking tall.
Yes, he's very tall.
It reminds me of something on Let's Go to Court. They had a conversation, I think, on the Patreon. Is he really hot or is he just tall?
He's really hot. Tommy Thor is very hot.
Yes, he's pretty hot, though. I do. I concur.
6'6" is, like, honestly, way taller than I want. That is not a good proportion for little old 5'4 me. So, yeah. When I dated someone...
You don't want to climb him like a tree?
I would need to climb him like a tree. When I dated somebody who was a foot taller than me, who was 6'4", like, I spent most of my time, like, shoving him onto the road so I could kiss him on standing on the curb, you know? Be like, oh, look, we're near some steps. Hop on the step. Okay, now you only have to bend down a little bit. Yeah. However, Brian does not take this advice. It's when he has the perfect moment to talk about his feelings. Picture it. Sicily, 1922. But seriously, picture it. Night has fallen and Brian has just fixed a porch railing that he broke earlier that day. It went from being an unsteady, falling ass over tea kettle railing and having a goat mock you hazard to now a sturdy, level, if you tip your head to the side, railing that will no longer be the cause of a lawsuit. Jenny is sitting on the porch swing, Afghan on her lap, admiring the good job Brian has done. And now he can finally join her. When he sits on the swing, she companionably shares the Afghan with him, and she turns to him, saying softly, "You've changed." He smiles warmly, looking at her. "Really? Is that a good thing?" She chuckles. "You tell me." They lock eyes. Still, no kiss tractor beam.
Damn it.
Seriously. And he responds, "Maybe so." And they sit and join each other's company, rocking back and forth on the porch swing in the midst of a beautiful country evening with absolutely no confessions of love.
Yet. Although I did like that line when she's like, "You've changed." And he's like, "Is that a good thing?" And she's like, "You tell me." I'm like, oh. A few days later, he has another missed moment when after failing to failing to repair a wobbly table, but effectively making it shorter, he confesses to Jenny, "I traded in my suit for a toolbox, but neither seems to fit." She teases, "You look great with the toolbox, just don't open it." He chuckles and they lock heart eyes and he says, "I'll admit, I'm having a very good time and I didn't think that was possible, so thank you." She smiles back, "Sure." And then the day arrives when Daryl arrives. Well, Brian's painting the front porch banister when Daryl pulls up in his, I think you were supposed to say Beamer.
Nope. I'm saying.
You spelled it nope. Bimmer?
Bimmer. It's actually called a Bimmer.
Bimmer?
Yep.
Why is it a Bimmer?
Because Beamers refer to a very specific type of BMW, but a Bimmer are BMWs in general. And I know this from my cousin who has a BMW, who like went to a BMW gathering. And yes, Bimmer is the word.
Okay. A little bit of information I will not probably use ever in my life outside of this sentence.
Because everybody's going to be like, Bimmer, what are you talking about?
Yeah. I'm like, you misspelled Beamer. No, I didn't. And here's why. Brian is very nice, warmly greets him, and then Daryl and Jenny spend like 5 minutes max talking. It's a little confusing how brief his visit is. Daryl brings a truffle cutter under the guise of returning it, but really he bought a new one as an excuse to visit. He admits to her that he was jealous when he heard another man's voice on the phone. He clears up that there is nothing between her and Brian but the house. And I'm like, really? Because at this point I'm feeling some serious vibes from both sides. But, okay, Jenny, sure. Daryl looks at the room they're sitting in and grimaces as if it pains him to say, well, it's, nice. Jenny shakes her head. It's obvious that Daryl doesn't get her vision. And I say, what vision? Because the house looks almost exactly like how she got it, outside from the stuff that she's correcting and fixing. It still looks like an old lady lives there. And maybe that's the bed and breakfast way.
Yeah, that is frequently the bed and breakfast way. If you do some bed and breakfast Googling, it's like that scene from As Good as It Gets with the Laura Ashley vomiting all over every surface. Doilies? Yes, please.
Well, see, then that's not her vision. She just inherited and incorporated old lady vibes into her bed and breakfast dreams. But now that Daryl has appropriately peed on her, he can leave, and he does so, not hugging or kissing her, but scampering down the front steps, yelling back up at her as he stands.
Okay, so Tamara, I have a confession to make. I decided to do all of your lines in tongue twister. Sorry.
Okay, job well done, Corinne. Not hugging or kissing her, but scampering down the front steps, yelling back up at her as she stands on the porch. I'll call ya. Fuck, Daryl, you're so romantic. I can hardly stand it. Jenny responds more warmly than me, saying, I'd like that. And Daryl drives off. When Brian asks her if Daryl is her boyfriend, she says, I don't know what we are. We used to be together, but then he got a job that travels a lot, and I'm out here, so it doesn't really seem like there's much there. Jenny's relationship status? It's complicated. Brian's relationship status? Single-ish / it's complicated.
Oh, hey, Brian, is that a toolbox, or are you just happy to see me?
Or is it a truffle cutter?
Seriously, though, that fucker drives all the way out there in his Bimmer, and he's like, here's a truffle cutter. Bye!
Oh, no, he just wants to peep out the guy that's living in a house with his ex.
Yeah, and what he does with a conversation is just be like, I was jealous when I heard another guy. Is there something between you two? Like,
yeah.
Ugh. Also, I have to say, that Daryl's fucking hair drives me crazy in this movie. I've seen him in other movies. He has the same hair, like other Hallmark movies. He has the same hair and it's fine. But for the specific kind of role that he has in this movie, he needs a fucking shorter haircut, or he needs to do something different with his long hair. And I'm totally fine with a guy who has long hair, but like the way it's coiffed is not correct for what's going on with him.
And usually Hallmark's top notch with their styling. I know.
You might have a point there. But you know, if they'd given him Hallmark curls, Hallmark ringlets, maybe he would have been.
Could have been thing.
He could have looked pretty good with that, you know?
Oh, I'm trying to picture it and I'm having a hard time.
Brian goes to the general store to talk. Oh, I was like, to talk women? What? But to talk women as one does at the general store with the other bros there.
Oh my God, this part, this whole scene, this, oh my God. Uh-huh. That line, perfection, because yes, as one does. Talking women in the general store with all the bros.
Yes.
Continue, please.
Brian tells Tommy Thor, turns out Daryl is her ex-boyfriend, but he doesn't seem so ex. The studly 20-something guy who fixed Brian's car for the expensive watch pipes in. I have an ex-wife. We've been divorced for 3 years, but I still ain't over her. Brian doesn't appreciate the interruption. Right, so he just shows up unannounced in his Brooks Brothers suit and BMW. Tommy Thor dryly responds, has he no decency? Brian continues, what does he have that I don't have? Okay, one, money, two, car, three, a job. Yes, yes, Brian, he has
all of
those things, which are handy, very handy to have, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yep, like you can ask me, I think I'd prefer those things. Just call me crazy.
Uh-huh, I know. Do I want to date Daryl? Absolutely not, though. No.
But he has a Bimmer.
He's got a Bimmer, though. Oh, my gosh.
Well, he's got such a cute Bimmer.
I mean, if he's got a Bimmer.
He's got a Bimmer and a Brooks Brothers suit.
A Bimmer and a Brooks Brothers suit.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
That's right. He's a boy with a Bimmer and a Brooks Brothers suit.
Oh, my gosh. Like, how can you resist that? Oh, my gosh. Yeah. No. I would much rather actually date Brian, how he has become now, where he's actually helpful around the house and stuff.
Oh, okay. Ugh. Oh, I know. Larry's so handy, and it just... Oh. Oh, you want me to do blibbity blue? Do you want me to change your oil? Do you want me to paint that wall? Do you want me to fix this light switch? And I'm just like, oh my God, just stop it. Stop. Just be still, my heart.
You're like, is that a toolbox or are you just happy to see me?
Oh, he's like, man, my garage, if it was a little bit emptier, I really want to make some like resin furniture. Like we were looking at this cool furniture online on Instagram. He's like, I would like to do something like that. All I would need is, and he was like listing off all this stuff. And I'm like, stop it. Stop. Oh, you want to build furniture, you say?
You're like, hello, Luke McFarland. I mean, Larry. Yeah, Larry. Oh my gosh, what if Larry and Luke McFarlane became best friends and they hung out all the time and Larry got to use Luke McFarlane's wood shop?
Oh my God, I would be over there a lot. I would just be injecting myself and being like, what's all going on over here? Totally casual, just stopping by, even though this is 17 miles out of my way. Cool.
Totally casual, nothing's to
see here. Cash. Yeah.
How are those toolboxes going, guys?
Just be in the corner with the drill every time they say something clever. Wee wee.
I give Brian wee wee 2 drills of approval.
All right.
But Daryl gets, what's that you hear? 0 drills of approval.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The sound of silence. Stedley Mechanic sidles up to the counter and offers his 2 bits. The way I see it, you have 2 choices. Tommy Thor says, enlighten us, Rusty. Ah, now we know Studley Mechanic's name is Rusty. Rusty prattles on. 1, marry this girl. Just hit her with the ring. And he throws his hand up, putting a washer around his finger. Brian rebuts, Rusty, we haven't even kissed. Rusty responds, well, that's why she's not into you. Brian argues, it's complicated. And Tommy Thor is intrigued. What was the other choice, Rusty? Rusty pauses. Yeah, no, I can't remember. But it was a really good one. Tommy Thor asks, how do you know if you can't remember? Rusty replies, well, now you sound like Gloria. Ooh, she was mean, but damn, she could cook. Mmm. Woo-woo! He gives it 2 drills of approval. Brian says, Jenny is an incredible cook. And Rusty snaps from his reverie. Then you need to lock that down stat and get a prenup. I can just imagine Rusty's prenup. During our marriage, all the home-cooked food I can eat, and if we ever divorce, must have weekly deliveries of delicious baked goods.
Well, that's fair.
What do you think would be in Rusty's prenup?
That. Yes, that.
That.
That pretty much, I think, would be the extent of Rusty's concerns.
Yes, absolutely.
This part, I just, ay. I'm all, guys, don't talk like that. This part just drives me bananas because I'm like, no self-respecting guy, let alone two guys, let alone three guys are going to have this conversation in a goddamn general store. Oh, Lord.
No, I've heard different guys talk like that.
Okay. You need to call me immediately if you ever hear conversations like this, because if he hasn't even kissed the girl and two guys are like, you need to marry that, shut that, like, lock that shit down.
Okay,
like,
no, you're right. But yeah. Nobody says that. I mean, you know, except in a Hallmark movie. Like, women aren't saying, you need to lock that down. Yeah. You need to lock down that Daryl. He's, you know, he's got his Bimmer and his job and his...
Oh, yeah. All the important things to me.
Uh-huh. I do like money, though. Money's good.
Money's nice.
Yeah. Money's really nice. Yeah. When Brian gets home, he greets an upset Jenny. She just can't find Gabby the goat anywhere. They look for her into the night and eventually find her carrying her back home to the barn. Turns out Gabby is pregnant and sometime in the wee hours of the morning gives birth to... this is where Tamara finally has her illegitimate love story coming to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
Gabby gives birth to a couple of kids. Brian suggests naming them Bonnie and Clyde, but Jenny doesn't want to fate them to a life of crime, so she suggests Lucy and Ricky. If goats are who you name them after, I suggest being careful, because Lucy will burn down your barn with her hijinks. I'm just saying is all.
Or they will have an incestuous relationship because Lucy and Ricky were married.
That wouldn't... Oh, because they're twins. Yeah, because they're twins. Right. Got it. Yes. No. That also problematic as well.
Mm-hmm. This part was funny too, because when they finally found Gabby and she was like laying down in the middle of a dirt road at night, and they pick her up thinking there's something wrong with her, so they solicit the help of the jammy neighbor Alice to come check her out, and Alice is like, you just gotta let things run its course. Mm-hmm. And there was a couple of beats where they're like, is she dying? No, she's just pregnant. And I was like, this Hallmark movie is just full of those, like, oh, did I forget to mention this one important detail? You don't have a whole house. You have a half a house. Oh, your goat is not dying. It's just pregnant.
Yay!
And then there's another one that's yet to come that's just completely in the Hallmark scheme of things.
Ooh, I can't wait. I don't know what it is, but I'm excited for you to point it out.
Oh, you already did. When I read through your outline, you saw it. Oh. You pointed it out. And you're like, oh, look at this coming from a mile away. I wonder what's going to happen here.
Little, like, fireworks are going off in the background. Yes. Some flags are flying.
Exactly. Flag, 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 flag. Brian and Jenny continue to get the house ready for B&B greatness. When they're sanding some shelves, it looks like they might be about to kiss. I thought they were going to do the whole... oh, look, you have something on your face move that they do in so many of these rom-coms, as they were both covered from head to toe in sawdust, but that didn't happen, and it might not have happened because that kiss would have been a little bit grainy. Probably exfoliating. Probably would have sanded some taste buds off of their tongue.
Y'all need a little, like, exfoliation sometimes, though. Seriously?
That evening, they have a romantic dinner by candlelight because Brian accidentally blew out all the fuses being overly ambitious with the porch light. And they don't kiss there either. However, Jenny does share how she's always been into cooking, and Brian shares that he's always been into stocks. In fact, as a kid, he was a regular Alex P. Keaton. While all the other kids were playing, he was figuring out what stocks to trade. It had been the entirety of his life until a house came along and changed everything for him.
Aww.
And finally, when it's time for bed and they are saying goodnight to each other and looking at each other with heart eyes, you think it might be ding, 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 kiss a clock, but sadly it is not. Instead, they part ways again, listening to the pitter-patter of rain as they snuggle into their respective beds. However, things aren't too snuggly for too long when they're both woken up by raindrops falling on their heads. Not surprisingly, the roof is shit. And sadly, there are leaks throughout the house. They meet up in that hallway and wonder what to do about the leaks. Brian says he's going to go to the barn to check on the kids when a silence falls between them. The KISS tractor beam locks on, and Brian gently... Did you put that in quotes for a reason? Oh, I put quotes on that for a reason.
Oh.
Okay. Brian gently wipes a bit of water from the side of Jenny's face. They slowly move closer together and kiss. And it's a good one. They pull apart, and much to my bewilderment, he apologizes for kissing her, and she says, it's okay, and they part ways. Huh? I said gently because when he goes to dab the water from her face, he like thumbs her in the cheek pretty hard. Like, I bet there are some fingerprints there. Or maybe I was just like, that was not gently, honey. That was just like, dunk, dunk, dunk. You got water right there. Dunk, dunk.
I actually had a guy who I went out on a few dates with who did the you have something on your face move. And I've always found that move to be contrived. But when he did it, I was kind of like, like, I was like, what the fuck? Seriously? I can't believe I reacted that way. And also I was like, I do.
You slap the shit out of yourself.
Yeah.
Get it off.
Yeah.
The next morning, Brian finishes his morning run and sees Jenny as she's about to leave to make some deliveries and meet the distributor. He wants to talk with her about the kiss, but she puts it off as she's running late, asking if they can meet later. Sure. Great idea, Jenny. Nothing can go wrong with putting off that conversation, right? ?
No, nothing could possibly go wrong.
Do you see this coming? Did you miss this? They're not talking about something important. I wonder if this is going to come back later.
I couldn't possibly guess. Huh. Let us see.
Just like I didn't know that he was going to be under the sink and the pipe would break and he would be sprayed with water. Oh, so surprising.
Yeah, skipped that whole part.
Or when they're painting the house and get into a paint fight. Ho, 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 some hijinks there.
Don't you know? You better watch out, or there might be a little something on the side of your face that I might need to wipe away.
With my knuckle, accidentally knocking you out, because he wiped that off hard. I just say, go back and watch that spot. I was like, whoa, is he mad at her cheek?
We at One Dry Kiss can provide tutorials on how to do romance right. Jenny leaves for her big day, and as soon as Brian enters the house, the phone rings. He picks it up and, surprise, it's Harry on the other end of the line. Harry has big news. He got a promotion, and now his former position is open, and he's giving it to Brian. If he's interested. Harry is expecting an immediate and enthusiastic response from Brian, but instead gets silence on the other end of the phone. Brian eventually responds, I really appreciate the offer, but I'm going to have to think about it. It'd be really hard for me to leave Jenny, and I like who I am here. Harry responds dubiously, well, now you're scaring me. Brian asks Harry, have you ever thought that there's something more important than making money? Harry scoffs. I put my ass on the line for you, and I'm going to need an answer by the end of the day. Brian heads out to the general store to get a drill bit and tell Tommy Thor that he got a job offer, but may end up staying because his priorities have shifted so much. He shows Tommy Thor his phone. This used to be my lifeline to work, and now I have pictures of my kids on it. The aforementioned kids that Tamara spoke of. Illegitimate children.
From a single mother.
Tommy Thor looks down at a picture of Brian's two very cute baby goats. Tommy Thor says, I could see the resemblance. Brian says, I like it here. I like my life with Jenny and I'm happy. Tommy Thor says, sounds like you want to stay. And Brian is, until He walks by the coffee shop and sees Jenny and Daryl sitting cozily at a table together. Inside the coffee shop, Daryl proposes to Jenny and she turns him down, saying, "Things are developing between me and Brian, but since Brian doesn't have his miracle ear on him, he can't hear that. All he sees is a jealousy-inducing scene that gets worse as the guy who has just been dumped gives Jenny a kiss on the lips,
huh?
And a hug, and he tells her whoever she ends up with is lucky, and they part ways. I just got turned down proposing to you. You know what I'm gonna do? Give you a smacker on the lips. Sounds like a great idea.
Brian goes home to sulk, and Jenny goes to her meeting with the distributor. It's very promising. They say they're going to try her food out in smaller markets first, and if it catches on there, they'll move on to larger markets. They'll handle the promotions, the website, everything. And I say, Jenny, run! First of all, if they're trying to brand market your brand without your say-so in it, that's problematic. And also, kind of bullshit, because I'm like, no company I think would ever do that. We like your products so much that we're going to completely run your company for you. You let us know if that's okay with you. Okay, bye. Just in the midst of trying to find marketing / graphic design jobs and all the stuff that they want you to do, I'm like, I doubt they would anybody ever outside of Hallmark Town and be like, yeah, just let us take care of it. We'll handle everything for you. Sure. Cool.
Look, you have not tasted Jenny's croissants, and if you did, you would be inspired beyond your wildest imagination.
Okay. Well, these must be some goddamn orgasmic croissants, because it's late by the time she gets home, but she's walking on sunshine. Whoa! Ooh. Until Brian approaches her. Hey! With his bags packed, stonily telling her that he got a job and he's going to stay with Harry until he finds a permanent place to live. But he'll drop her a line once he does. Jenny is reeling. You weren't going to talk to me about this or even say goodbye? He pulls a full Anakin Skywalker and sternly says, I've been waiting to talk to you all day. He does not ask her about her date with Daryl, and the cab pulls up and he drives off, leaving a very confused Jenny behind. Some time has passed, and Jenny's invited her neighbor Alice and coffee shop confidant Ashley over to sample some more of her food. An asparagus and cheese souffle? Yes, please, Jenny confesses. I miss Brian. I thought I was in love with Daryl, but I think I was more in love with the idea of him and his brimmer.
His bimmer?
Oh, yeah, Bimmer. I think I was more in love with the idea of him and his Bimmer. Brian made me laugh. Ashley, trying to make her feel better, says, you're the prettiest gal in the county. I'm sure you'll find someone else soon. How about Tommy Thor from the general store?
Ooh, yeah.
And let's add a record scratch moment here, because while I think definitely Jenny is a cutie, Ashley is a smoke show and probably the hottest woman in town. But regardless of lame beauty rankings, Jenny knocks that idea down. You know, I'm just focusing on opening my B&B right now. Yes, Jenny, reach for those goals. Ashley is inspired by this and reflects, you know, the owner of the coffee shop is retiring soon. Maybe I should buy it from him. You've inspired me, Jenny. I'm going to make my own happily ever after. Alice raises her teacup. I'll drink to that. And the three of them cheers.
Yay. Back in New York City, Brian is killing it in the markets, but is missing Jenny back home. And back home in the country, Jenny's kitchen triumphantly passes her health inspection. She also ends up getting some big news. Premium Natural Foods has given her an advance. So she does some research, finds out how much the house is worth, and gives Brian a call. He's in the middle of a meeting, but ducks out of the meeting to go back to his office and talk to her. He's so happy to hear her voice, and she is trying to keep herself together, talking to the guy who essentially ran out on her. She lets him know that she's opening the B&B this weekend, a trial run with mainly friends, and that she got an advance, and if she can pay him in installments, she can buy his half of the house from him. She's talked to a real estate agent and thinks they can work out a fair deal. Her voice is a siren song to him, and he immediately says, I have tomorrow off. Why don't I come by to sign the paperwork? She's confused. You don't work on Fridays? He chuckles uncomfortably. Yeah. What can I say? I miss the kids. So tomorrow? Jenny agrees. Sure, sounds like a plan. But she's filled with all kinds of mixed feelings. The next day, much to Harry's chagrin, Brian skips work. However, Harry is also a good friend, and he lets Brian use his beautiful Mercedes sports car. Oh, yeah. Fuck that Bimmer.
I know. What's a Mercedes? A Mimmer?
Look, the Mimmer is amazing and marvelous and totally stomps the Bimmer.
Is that right?
Yes. So his beautiful Mimmer sports car to drive to Pennsylvania and get Jenny out of his system. Brian arrives early and stops by the coffee shop where a hostile Ashley greets him and begrudgingly gives him a seat. Brian asks, is something the matter? Ashley emphatically states, men! Brian delves further. Men in general or just me? Ashley then shares a piece of her mind with Brian. You know, Jenny's ex-boyfriend proposed to her and she turned him down because she was in love with you and you just left town. Brian is surprised. How do you know this? And I would think at minimum because Ashley and Jenny are besties, but Jenny also has receipts. She states, because she was sitting at the same table you are right now and I saw the whole thing. Brian excitedly leaps up. Thank you. He throws down $20 on the table, paying for the cup of coffee he never had, and runs out the door, driving over to Jenny's B&B, bed and breakfast. In his
I was
memory.
Kind of laughing at this point because he goes into the restaurant and it's like maybe a 20-top dining room. And they have like literally six waitresses like pulled behind the counter. And I'm like, I don't think that owner needs to sell this place. Maybe he just needs to cut down on his staffing because if there's like 20 tables, he doesn't need six waitresses, I don't think.
It's a 1-to-2 ratio.
Okay. Yeah. So you get a lot of service. Yes. That's why she was able to see that whole breakup because she was standing right there looking between Daryl and Jenny going, anything else? No? Okay. I'm just going to stand here because I have nowhere else to be.
She's their very own Greek statue. Exactly.
Oh, yes. Yes. their very own Corinne Real doll. And if you guys get bored, you can try to fling food into my open mouth.
Grapes, please.
Brian pulls up and Jenny's in the front yard spending quality time with the goats, holding one of the kids in her arms. She's surprised to see him and asks, what are you doing here so early? We said we'd meet at 10 a.m. Brian walks towards her. I'm not early at all. I was almost too late. Jenny strokes her emotional support baby goat's head and asks, too late for what? Brian says, Ashley told me that Daryl proposed to you and you turned him down. I didn't know that. They stare at each other in silence for a moment. When the other baby goat bleats sharply and toddles over to Brian, he picks up the kid. And Jenny says, well, now you do. Brian finally says what's on his mind. I missed you, Jenny. I want to come home. She responds, that's the first time you've called this house your home. And he replies, it's the first time I've called anywhere my home. And they don't kiss. But they do walk into the house together holding baby goats. So that's just as romantic, right? Right?
No, I just think of baby goats eating on the furniture and pooing all over the place. But, you know, that's just me.
That evening, Jenny is having the opening party for her business, and the head chef at the restaurant where she used to work tastes her food and proclaims, your little restaurant with beds just may succeed, and smiles fondly at her. On the opposite side of the room, Brian is talking with Tommy Thor and Harry, who made it up to the party as well, even though he didn't have his Mimmer. Both men say that Brian's really got to lock things down with Jenny and propose. But this is not news to Brian because he has come prepared with the ring. He crosses the room and when Jenny turns towards him, he holds out the ring box and she quickly says, yes! Brian opens the box to reveal a large diamond ring and says, marry me, Jenny, so I can make you laugh the rest of my life. And she joyfully exclaims, nothing would make me happier. They kiss and everyone at the party is thrilled. But most of all, Jenny and Brian are thrilled.
Aww.
The end. Oh, my God.
That is the look of a movie that you loved. I can see it on your face.
I that last part, that we were arguing about this earlier, because I'm like, they've known each other for maybe a couple of months. They kissed once that we know of, and everyone's like, lock that shit down. You need to marry her stat. That just sounds like a really bad idea.
I don't know.
Are they just doing it so they don't have to do all the paperwork for the house?
My parents got married after, like, somewhere like 1 to 3 months. So.
Mm-hmm. But there was reason behind that. He was leaving town, and if she wanted to stay with them, then she had to come with.
Well, you know, if they're going to be living in the house together romantically involved, Hallmark Town says you definitely need to be engaged, preferably married.
That just sounds like, I mean, okay, your parents are the exception, not the rule. Most times if people get married after a couple of months, it generally sometimes doesn't turn out that well.
Really?
Anyways, with that being said, Corinne, how many dry kisses would you give All My Heart?
I give All My Heart 3.5 dry kisses. I really like this Hallmark movie. I like the entire series. I like their relationship. Although in the amazing or awful category, I feel like Brennan Elliott has some room to grow in the amazing territory. However, I do feel like he did grow as he worked on the house and was actually supportive. But initially he was a dick. And then he did the dick move after he yelled, curse your son, but never the betrayal, when he didn't even bother to, like, ask her what was going on. I understand he had, like, a timeline, but yeah. The movie is not diverse at all. The mechanic is something.
He's brownish.
Yeah.
He's brownish with a southern accent.
With a southern accent. I don't know why he's got a southern accent, but he does. Because nobody else does, and they're in Pennsylvania.
Right.
So, yeah. Him having a southern accent was an interesting call. But, yeah. I like their relationship. I particularly like the series because it deals with, during their, like, period of engagement, how their relationship evolves. And like, I think after they get married or something. I don't know if I've seen the third one. But so it goes beyond just like, oh, hey, they like each other and they live happily ever after, probably. So they actually have like real conflict and it's actually good. So
what? There's problems after they've only known each other for a couple of months? You don't say.
Shocking, but true. Yes. So, Tamara, what do you give All My Heart?
I'm waffling between 2 and 2.5 dry kisses.
Okay, you've got to remember that 2 dry kisses is that stinking movie with the guy who was nagging the woman who was on the dating show.
All right, 2.5. That's our barometer.
Yeah, because like 2 is that bad.
You've given stuff 1 dry kiss. I don't think I've ever given anything 1
dry
kiss.
Yeah, fucking Bridesmaids. That's the only movie I've given 1 dry kiss to.
This is my Bridesmaids. This is my Bridesmaids.
Really?
No, it's not. I know it's a Hallmark movie, and I enjoy a good Hallmark movie, but sometimes there's just so many things that topple the Hallmark movie off to one side that I just can't. The conversation that guys have, and I know you said you've heard it, and I just, these guys I have never met, the ones, and atop of the, you have to marry her, you have to marry her today. I just can't get over that trope. It's just like, man. Trying to find the words. It's the more Hallmark movies I watch, the bigger problem I have with the people saying, like, you are not okay unless you're married and have kids and are in a relationship. And I know it's like a rom-com, but it's just, I don't know. I don't know what it is about this movie that just pokes me in the wrong way. Maybe it's because they've only known each other for a couple of months and they're living in a house and they kiss once. And then in the next scene, everyone's like, you got to get married. You got to get married. You got to get married. And you're like, why? Can't they just live together? They already have a couple of kids.
I just think you're jealous of Jenny because she got a house.
Probably. I'm projecting hardcore because she got a house plopped onto her lap. And she's like, oh, what am I going to do with this? Oh, and by the way, those people love my cookies and they're going to give me an advance, a very hefty advance, which also never happens. We don't know if your product's going to be a success or a failure. So we're going to give you six figures. Or probably not, maybe like 4 or 5 figures of an advance to test it and see if we're actually going to roll forward with it.
Oh, boy.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I just wasn't in the right mind to watch this Hallmark movie, but it just did not resonate with me. So 2.5 dry kisses for me.
Sounds good. And Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Oh, I'm bringing the pain. Ugh. I am bringing the pain next week because... You want amazing or awful, ugh, and I am giving you the absolute poster child movie for that theme, and it is Twilight.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you hurt me so? But I'll do it for you.
When we first talked about awful or amazing, I was like, Twilight, gotta do Twilight, because that's just like, you want to talk about your problematic relationships, boy howdy. Top of the charts.
Woo. Yeah, that's I bless all you people who are Twilight fans out there. Woo. You want to talk about some toxic relationship action? Let's meet Edward. I'm excited to be digging into this, and I'm excited that I am not doing the script this week.
You're welcome.
Yes. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you have anything you'd like to say about our month of amazing or awful, please email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or reach out to us via Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all on the social medias, all at onedrykiss.
Okay. And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate or review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we appreciate you stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah. See you next time.
See you next time. Totally had several laugh out loud moments again while listening to Naughty Hill.
Naughty Hill? It's Naughty Hill.
Oh my God, it's like the porn version.
That's exactly what I'm going to call it. Naughty Notting Hill. Ooh. Damn it, we should have said that in the episode.
I know!
Damn.
It might make the outtakes.